This podcast is brought to you by MITEX, the Massachusetts Innovation and Technology Exchange, the region's premier association for thought leadership, technology trends, building business relationships, and professional training and development. For more information, go to www.mitx.org.
Hey, get your fresh bizcast here. I'm DC Dennison. This week, a special real estate edition with Globe reporter Kim Blanton, who explains some of the factors that are shaping the current housing market. Also, Jen Abelson on the invasion of the Mexican food chains. First up, Kim Blanton.
So, Kim Blanton, you've been writing some great stories on the real estate market recently. The one I read most recently was about Richard Syron saying that the luxury housing market is experiencing a bubble. Is that where this is happening, this at the luxury end of the market?
I was actually surprised to hear Syron say that. You know, he's an old friend of ours in Boston, but not a lot of people in his position talk bubble. Mm-hmm. So it was very interesting. In terms of luxury, it's not the condos. He's talking about houses and houses in the suburbs. Definitely we're starting to see a slowdown there. It's not really showing up in the numbers that we report every month, because it's also got sort of middle and lower priced houses in that group as well. So we haven't broken out. In fact, I would like to look at that at some point and hope to do that. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that it is slowing down.
It's interesting he brought up his own experience. That was sort of funny.
Yeah, yeah. Although you can't feel too sorry for him, since he got like $2.5 million
yeah.
for his house.
Right, so. Right. So so is the middle market kind of stable in terms of these, the kind of the bubble? And
yes, I do think that the middle market is stable, although one thing Syron pointed out is because we've had so much price appreciation here, the middle market in some cases is moving into the luxury market in terms of prices, because mm-hmm. prices have gone up so much. Luxury, I think he means over $1 million. When you get into a $700,000 or $800,000 house, though, it's probably slower in that market than it is in the really middle market, like the $375,000 house, which is the median house here. Mm-hmm. I think those markets, though, are also slowing down. August home sales went up, but for three of the last 5 months, we've had sales going down compared to the same month a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the September numbers aren't going to be in for a while, but I have strong feeling that we're probably going to see declines in sales in September, and I think we're going to start seeing a little bit more of a squeeze on the housing market as the fall progresses.
What's it like for you dealing with all these real estate agents? They must hate to see these stories come out.
Well, I always say they take optimism pills in the morning, and I'm also always trying to find one that is kind of can give me a little bit more realistic picture. Of course, they would say I take pessimism pills. So, mm-hmm. You know, the numbers eventually show what's going on.
Yeah.
And so then they do know that, and eventually they'll come down to earth and talk to me. But they're a pretty independent group, and every real estate agent's different. So
oh,
you can
yeah.
find what you want.
Yeah, yeah. So why condos? Why are condos immune to this?
Yeah, condos... Well, that's a really good question. I'm not entirely sure I believe it, all the reasons that are cited. One, though, is baby boomers have been selling their houses in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
They're tired of living in the big house and cleaning it. The kids are gone. They finally paid off the college. They don't want to do the lawn anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe they lived in the city before they moved to the suburbs, and mm-hmm. they want to go back. I think that is happening. I also think that, for example, Cambridge biotech industry is growing a lot, so there's a lot of people moving into condos there.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that are happening. And also, condos downtown are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people in the middle and lower are not getting wage gains, but the high end in this country has done very, very well in terms of wealth and income in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
We had a drop after the high-tech boom, but this is definitely a time where it's good to be rich and
yeah.
get richer. And, you know, also people can sell their houses and afford these condos downtown. So I think that's partly going on. They want luxury, and
yeah.
they can afford it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can see that's a big part of the market. When you see the marketing of them, you know, it's always granite top,
right.
you know, kitchen countertops,
yes.
that kind of thing.
Yes,
that's
I'm sure something is going to replace granite as the cool thing eventually, because now everybody has granite.
Yeah.
But, you know, then you think, well, everything seems to be luxury now. But
yeah,
the downtown is very, it's a very high-end market. You know, you can't really get anything for under $450,000 or $500,000.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Wow. So first-time buyers, what's their situation now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't really done, I'm not new in this beat and haven't really done a story about first-time home buyers, but anybody will tell you, Massachusetts is really kind of bumping up against our, quote, what they call affordability limits. In other words, first-time buyers can't afford. Once you're in, you're gaining equity with everyone else, and you can try to trade up.
Right.
But the first-time buyer, you know, without a down payment, just gets harder and harder to get in. One of the things housing experts are worried about is that, you know, who do the people who were the first-time home buyers sell their houses to so that they can trade up?
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely concern that that floor under the market is it's getting very weak.
Oh, I
and,
see.
And, you know, Massachusetts has always been a tough place to buy a house, but it's just gotten gotten really tough.
How's New England versus other regions?
Well, Siren thinks the Boston area is one of the bubbliest markets in the country, you know. California's the worst. I think something like 7 out of the 10 or 8 out of the 10 most expensive, most, you know, crazy housing markets are in California.
Oh, I see.
Another thing that makes Massachusetts look good, too, is that because our housing is so expensive, I think there's a little bit less investing speculation here.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to buy a condo and flip it, you're going to buy it in Florida or Arizona, where you can actually get a condo for $200,000. It's hard to flip a $500,000 condo. You know, it probably feels like flipping an anvil or something.
Yeah,
so I think the prices are really high here, and so you've got a little bit less of that investor craziness. But the concern here is our job growth, and our incomes are not keeping up with, and again, the affordability issue, keeping up with house prices.
Yeah.
And does that constitute a bubble? You know, I don't know. We have we've always had like a shortage of housing in New England. We can't build. Towns won't let us build. So that plays a role in kind of keeping the housing market from collapsing as well. I don't know which way it's going to go, frankly.
It'll be
interesting to see how it unfolds. But I think people agree house prices are going to have to go down or they're not going to sell them anymore.
And also, I think you've done stories about how they stay on the market longer.
Houses are staying on the market longer. Brokers are trying to figure out ways to get attention to their houses, so they'll yank them off the market and relist them so that the people go, oh, it's a new listing, and that maybe they'll get some more traffic again at their clients' houses. But I'm starting to hear some, you know, stories that this September market, the post-Labor Day market, I'm starting to hear is not going well at all. So, you know, we're going to see more and more price drops, I think, as well. And they are probably starting already.
So what are some of the new neighborhoods that are hot? You mentioned, I thought that was interesting. You did a story about the new million-dollar
neighborhoods. Well, East Boston is just really hot. And, you know, it's funny because East Boston has always been the place, especially in the last, I don't know how many years, 15 years, maybe Latino immigrants who didn't have a lot of money or resources came. And now it's a place where they're actually to some extent getting driven out by high rents and by conversions of houses, Victorians and triple deckers into condos. And I believe, I haven't checked this out yet, that East Boston had its first Starbucks, so that tells you.
Oh, whoa.
Also, Savin Hill, which is near the Globe, is becoming really popular. They're just converting and renovating triple-deckers like mad. So that's another area. Quincy's very popular, especially a lot of immigrants and people who can't afford the sort of $300,000, $400,000 condo, maybe one in the low threes or in the twos, go to Quincy. It's interesting, you know, where people are having to spread out into places that they can afford.
That makes it much more interesting. Makes it much more dynamic and much more interesting to follow.
Yes, absolutely.
I thought it was...
following the sales of the Beacon Hill brownstones, you know, how interesting could that be at some point?
Yeah, I know. You also identified the first $1 million sales in Somerville.
Oh, yes, there were a few. In fact, I live in Somerville. I was, you know, I guess as a homeowner, happy to see that. But the Somerville, especially around Davis Square and also along the Cambridge line, basically people who can't afford to live in Cambridge, they move to Somerville. And if they don't have children, I don't think the Somerville schools yet are really up to par. But again, some somebody buys a $1 million house isn't going to send their kid to a public school anyway.
Yeah, right.
So that may not even be an issue. But I think there are like two or three Somerville houses now that have sold.
In the $1 million.
Yeah, single-family units.
Yeah.
Have sold in the $1 million range. So Somerville's definitely hot. It's been hot for a while, but now it's getting really expensive.
You know, that surprised me. I would have thought they would have already had $1 million homes when you mentioned that they had just had three and they just had their first one a while ago. I was like, wow.
Well, you know, one thing you have to remember about the Somerville housing stock, it's not very nice housing stock. I mean, there are, you know, a lot of places in Dorchester has beautiful neighborhoods of homes. Mm-hmm. Somerville doesn't have a lot of that. It's a really gritty working-class city.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of money to fix up those places.
Yeah.
It's also the students have moved from Cambridge into Somerville because they can't afford Cambridge anymore, so there's a lot of rental properties.
Yeah.
So it's taken a while to get into that high end, and, you know, three houses out of thousands of houses, there isn't a lot yet.
Yeah. I thought it was funny when you called the guy, the first guy, and he didn't seem to be too happy to hear from you.
Yeah, he said all his neighbors know that he was the first one to buy a $1 million house, which means he probably paid too much, he said.
Yeah, oh, that's funny. Last question, the contingency sales, people saying, I'll buy your house if I can sell mine, that really shows a slowdown.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. It shows maybe even a little desperation. I have this picture of this big old chain of people, like 500 people lined up, and everybody's waiting to sell for the next guy down the line to sell his house. It's, you know, I think we're a little bit spoiled. 5 years ago, you wanted to move. You put your house on the market. It was sold in 2 weeks, and you were out looking for another house, and it all came together. I remember my parents, you know, if they wanted to move up, they had to sell their house before they could buy a new one.
Right.
So it's not the end of the world. It's not certainly not unusual, but it's. I talked to one couple who lives in a South Shore suburb, and they were just having the hardest time selling their house. And they found the house they wanted, had a great school system. It was a nice move up for them. They had three kids, and they needed to move. They finally got an offer, and it was from someone else who said, I'll buy your house if I can sell mine.
Wow.
So they were still hanging.
So
it's getting really tough, very tough in the suburbs to sell a house now.
Yeah, wow. Great. Hey, well, Kim Blanton, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, so Jen Abelson, you've just written about the influx of Mexican restaurants to the Boston area. What's behind this sort of deluge of, you know, tacos?
Of tacos, yes. Well, basically, there's a lot of the big fast food chains. You've got Wendy's, McDonald's, and some other ones. Jack in the Box, that have looking for a way to expand their brands. They've got already have these existing smaller Mexican chains, and so basically what analysts say is that the fast food market is fairly saturated, you know, burgers everywhere, fried chicken everywhere, and that this is a new technique that's, you know, people are really liking. It's a little more fresher ingredients, a little more healthy, which is very, very popular now, and it's, you know, ethnic cuisine is really picking up in the area around here. So,
you know, what strikes me is it's all so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to one of these taquerias and it's faster than McDonald's.
Yeah, no, I think it was Qdoba that told me that they'll get you in and out within 2 minutes.
yeah, and it really does. It seems to be the perfect combination of fast and relatively healthy.
Mm-hmm.
When you're walking down that counter and you're just seeing, you know, kind of fresh vegetables and stuff getting loaded on.
Right. Yeah. No, it looks good, and it most of them it tastes pretty good too. I think that one of the other benefits for the fast food chains who are expanding this concept is that it's also a higher price point where they can charge a bit more for it. You know, these burritos and some of the other Mexican dishes are going for, you know, $5, $6, and $7, whereas, you know, you could get your hamburger or whatever McDonald's Happy Meal, you know, for like a few dollars less. So
yeah, when you think about McDonald's in places that aren't on the mainstream or where they want the business, they have those dollar value meals, and that's true. I mean, when I think about a place like Qdoba, it's about a $6, meal. So which one should we be looking for here in Boston? Where are we going to see them coming in?
I think a lot of them are, you know, actively looking in Boston proper, which is really interesting because it's difficult here. There's not a lot of space, but mm-hmm. they're trying to snap up everything that they can. El Pollo Loco has for sure. That's a California chain. Mm-hmm. They have signed a deal, I think, to add about 25 in the area over the next 5 years. Qdoba, which already has opened about half a dozen restaurants over the last 16 months or so. They're also planning another 25. Wow. They want to be in the city. These are ones that want to be near college students, which mm-hmm. we've got a lot of around here.
Yeah.
And also in, you know, heavily, you know, office areas and where there's a lot of people in general. So
yeah. So
I think some of the other ones like Baja Fresh, which we have a few of already here, that chain is owned by Wendy's. They're more of a suburban kind of location.
Oh, interesting.
So some of these are also targeting the suburbs. I think Qdoba, which is mainly looking at the Boston proper market, has opened one actually in out in the western suburbs, and they said it's one of their most successful ones in Millbury.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I would think like the real inner core city might be hard for these chains because there already are taquerias there,
mm-hmm.
and they lend themselves to, you know, just a storefront and, you know, they're in business,
mm-hmm.
whereas they don't have the space to make their big chain
right.
presence.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these are not necessarily, I don't think they're drive-through concepts, so some of them are okay in the city, but at the same time, they're opening, you know, right across existing ones.
Yeah.
They're challenging, like, Honest Taqueria, which, you know, we all, I think, know and like a lot around
yeah.
here in Porter Square, and there's a Qdoba that just opened right near the Wrap is turning into Bo Loco and a whole
yeah.
burrito theme, so...
Why is the Wrap? I don't think of the Wrap. Maybe that's the problem, is that I don't think of them as being sort of, you know, this kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's they feel they have to have a stronger identity.
That's pretty much it. It's largely a branding
mm-hmm.
concept. They claim they are already fairly, you know, burrito heavy.
Yeah,
and
they are actually.
And but it's people, the Wrap, they associate it with like cold cuts or, you know, cold sandwiches, which for the most part isn't what they are. You know, they have a few
yeah.
like salad wraps, but
yeah.
they think it's kind of a bad name for them, and that burritos are really popular, and so if you push more of this Mexican burrito theme,
yeah.
it'll draw more people in and
yeah.
really better, I guess, identify with what they're serving up there. So
do you think the places like Anna's and some of the just the one-off kind of places,
mm-hmm.
do you think they'll be able to survive in this environment?
I think so, as long as they're willing to change and respond, which is, you know, what the owner of Anna's told me, is that,
yeah.
you know, he only recently, for the first time, I think, in 9 years, added a new menu item.
Yeah.
And that was sort of like in response to, I think, you know, more Mexican restaurants opening up, offering other, you know, items
yeah.
and diversity. So, he, you know, they're going to have to respond. They're going to have to add new items to their own
yeah.
to sort of differentiate themselves. I think they'll always have sort of a loyal following.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these people might be turned off to, you know, it being big fast food chains that
yeah.
are running these Mexican restaurants.
Right, right. So Qdoba, which has made some inroads, they're not owned by a bigger chain. I mean, they're a big company, but it's not a Wendy's or a...
No, Qdoba is Jack in the Box.
It's Jack in the Box.
Right.
Wow.
So
I mean, I don't think Jack in the Box has much of a presence around here, do they?
No, not that I know of.
I thought of them as kind of a fading, like White Castle
right.
or something, you know?
Right. No, I think this is a way for them to revive a
yeah.
lot of their brands. And some of them are getting really successful. Like the McDonald's this week or last week said that they're probably going to spin off their Chipotle brand so that and give it an initial public offering to sort
uh-huh.
of allow it for expansion across the country. And the same thing, El Pollo Loco just got sold this week too, to some investment firm who plans for some major national expansion.
Wow.
Because they're growing and popular and
uh-huh.
I guess get it while it's hot. So
yeah, I wonder if people thought, like, New England must be the final frontier in the United States for many of these, for this kind of cuisine. I
mm-hmm.
think people thought, probably wrongly, that New Englanders didn't like this kind of food. I mean, we're about as far from the Southwest as you
right.
can get. Do you think that was part of it, that you know, they're finally realizing, well, we can really get into this market?
I think so. I think that was definitely part of it, that, you know, people felt that the New Englanders, their palate wasn't as mature
yeah.
to have these. But there's been a ton of different ethnic cuisines that have really thrived around here. You've got
mm-hmm.
Japanese and Indian and Thai.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of those are not necessarily fast food eateries, but you know, this presented an opportunity. They saw it worked in other areas. It's working in Colorado and, yeah, you know, Atlanta, that went out in New England. I think a lot of the reason also, most of the developers said the biggest problem here is just, you know, development issues with town permits and city permits and finding space and cost. Mm. It's really expensive to do business around here. But I think if it tested really successfully in other places, that it was worth the investment here. So we'll finally get it.
Yeah. One chain you didn't mention as getting involved with this is Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was surprised that they're not coming up with some sort of taqueria brand,
right?
Or even reconfigure their own brand. Are they getting into this, or are they just sort of the sort of default candidate?
Yeah, it's unclear what Taco Bell's vision is at this point. I don't know if it'll spur really a big shakeup in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a much lower price point. I mean, most of their menu, a lot of it is like under $1. So
yeah.
I don't know if that's just, you know, they don't feel like they're actually competing with these people. It's just a different clientele.
Yeah.
But you know, they're the biggest, and they're doing, I think, fairly well. So I don't know if they see a need to respond yet. But
have you seen any of these Taco Bell / Kentucky Fried Chicken combo?
Oh, the eateries, yeah.
Yeah, that is a strange combination.
Right.
You know, that you know, when you talk about sort of branding and consistency, and mm-hmm. you know, those two things just don't.
Right. Well, I think they're all owned by Yum Brands.
Right.
Right.
So,
and I think they'll throw Baskin Robbins in too sometimes.
Really?
I think.
Oh, wow.
Although they're
mess.
Not owned by them, but yeah.
Wow.
I've seen a few locations.
So finally, which ones have you been to, and which do you have a favorite taqueria around Boston?
I will decline to answer if I have a favorite taqueria.
Yeah.
That would unfairly, you know, make my reporting seem biased, but I've been to the Wrap, and you know, they're all of the ones that I've tried are pretty decent. I think one of my issues is that I'm not necessarily, I don't know what authentic is for sure, which
mm-hmm.
is actually an interesting point somebody raised who's from the South, who said, you know, it's on one hand it's nice that Boston's going to be getting all of these new Mexican chains, on the other hand they feel bad because they think we're ignorant, all we're going to get is this like fast food sort of cookie cutter food. But you know, I've been to Taco Bell. I've been to Honest Taqueria, which is mm-hmm. great, and I've been to Qdoba, and I've hit the Wrap. So.
So you've got a pretty good.
I've got a pretty good sense.
Pretty
yeah,
broad
no,
experience in taquerias.
I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there, a lot of people with different tastes. I think they should all, you know, thrive. We'll see.
Yeah, great. Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for listening, and check in next Wednesday for a brand new BizCast, or better yet, subscribe and have BizCast automatically delivered to your computer and MP3 player.